Imagine going to jail if you send money to your family. How about if you want to visit your family or travel, but the airplanes that you're traveling in have expired parts? What if you are in need of medication, but because of political reasons, your health is at risk? These are the results of U.S. and Western-led sanctions against the Islamic Republic of Iran, supposedly because of allegations that Iran's nuclear program is not for civilian purposes. In addition, the U.S. and its allies claim these sanctions are not meant to punish ordinary Iranians. So why are they? The sanction regime of the West is the subject of this news analysis, sanctions which Iran's leader has called barbaric and doomed to fail in achieving its political purpose.
Leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, receives a rapturous welcome from tens of thousands of people in Bojnur, the capital of North Khorasan province. Ayatollah Khamenei addressed the crowd and spoke of the animosity imperialists and Zionists have for the Iranian nation.
کینه این مردمی را که انقلاب کرده اند به دل گرفتند الان هم همین جوره.
He specifically named numerous rafts of sanctions as a major sign of this policy.
دشمنان ما رادیوها بعضی هم با اینا هم زبان میشن، هی مسئله تحریم رو بزرگ میکنن بزرگ میکنن. تحریم مال امروز و دیروز نیست، از اوائل تحریم وجود داشته است، البته تشدید کردن اثر نکرده، باز تدبیر دیگه اندیشیدن، باز اثر نکرده است.
Ayatollah Khamenei says the US and European countries seek to link sanctions to Iran's nuclear energy program, adding that the main reason behind the anti-Iran embargoes is not the nuclear issue. A look at the sanctions imposed on Iran over the past three decades showed that Washington began imposing sanctions on Iran way before the dispute over its nuclear program. Sanctions on selling aircraft spare parts to Iranian airlines, 1995. Ban on trade with U.S. investment in Iran, 1995. Ban on companies investing in Iran's energy projects, 1996. Ban on publishing scientific manuscripts from Iran, 2004. These are only parts of the U.S. unilateral and illegal sanctions on Iran, which have been followed by European countries. But what are the main reasons behind those sanctions? Ayatollah Khamenei says,
اون چی که اینها رو عصبانی میکنه از ملت ایران، اون سرفرازی ملت ایرانه. وانمود میکنن که اگر ملت ایران از انرژی هسته‌ای صرف نظر بکنن تحریما برداشته میشه. دروغ میگن. از روی بغض و کینه ای که دارن تصمیم میگیرن تحریم های غیر منطقی، تحریم هایی که همه عقلا و انسان های با انصاف عالم وقتی نگاه میکنن میبینن اینها کارهای غیر منطقی، در واقع وحشیانه است. این یک جنگ با یک ملت است. البته در این جنگ هم به توفیق الهی مغلوب ملت ایران خواهند شد.
Some believe that these sanctions are meant to inflict mass pain on the Iranian people.
Sanctions are aimed at strangling the economy of Iran, but they would create much discontent toward Western nations and potentially provoke a negative recourse.
It seems that putting pressure on ordinary people and instigating unrest is a real goal behind them. In 2010, U.S. Congressman Brad Sherman said critics of the sanctions argued that these measures will help the Iranian people. Quite frankly, they need to do just that. The same idea has been echoed by British Defense Secretary Philip Hammond. Hammond warned in an interview with The Observer that there would be more pain on the streets, predicting potentially regime-threatening disruption and dissent, which he said would pose a clear threat to the government. There is no doubt that sanctions do bite, but they can become a blessing in disguise for the country. And one thing is certain, The nuclear program has become an issue of national pride for Iranians, and they have shown that they will resist foreign pressures.
Well, let me introduce our guests for this news analysis. Author and political scientist Dr. Kaveh Afriyasabi joins us from Boston. We have investigative journalist Wayne Mattson joining us from Tampa, Florida, and political commentator Christopher Walker, who joins us from London. Gentlemen, welcome. Dr. Afriyasabi, I'm going to start off with you. Unilateral U.S. and U.S.-led sanctions on Iran, not to mention the U.N. resolutions, they're meant to have a political result in Iran's nuclear stand-up with the West. I'm sure you'll agree on that. But why are they aimed to punish ordinary Iranians, even to the point where the U.N. Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has cautioned that the growing sanctions are primarily hitting civilians?
Exactly. And, you know, there are some members of the U.S. Congress that have gone on record saying that the real intentions of the sanctions are indeed to hurt the Iranian people. And, you know, one must ask them what is behind such sinister objectives in light of the fact that, on the other hand, the U.S. Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, has repeatedly said that the U.S.'s intention is not to hurt the Iranian people. So you see a wide gap in the statements that are coming from Washington, as well as other Western capitals. But it's very clear that the sanctions have not had the desired strategic objective, just as the CIA director, James Clapper, admitted a few months ago. And so, you know, in retaliation, these Western governments intent on coercive diplomacy toward Iran have resorted to these very coercive sanctions that are hurting the Iranian people and are contrary to the humanitarian international law, and as the Supreme Leader rightly said, are barbaric because they affect, among other things, patients in Iran, people who use the civilian aircrafts in Iran, and so on. So I really think that as a result of the negative adversity generated, the sanctioning states are put on the defensive, and the leader's statement correctly pointed the finger at the barbaric and anti-human nature of these sanctions.
Well, since you mentioned of some lawmakers in the Senate, let's reflect on some of those statements, Wayne Mattson, that I've drawn up. For example, Republican Brad Sherman, who represents California. This is on a resolution that was authorized. H.R. 1905 is the number. He said, critics of the sanctions argue that these measures will hurt the Iranian people. Quite frankly, we need to do just that. Senator Mark Kirk, representing Illinois, sanctions are meant to cause so much suffering among ordinary Iranians that they will be forced to rise up against the regime, and if that doesn't work, we will go to war with Iran. So clearly you have a representation there. Is that the sentiment, generally speaking, of these senators amongst a host of other U.S. politicians in the U.S.?
Well, it's the sentiment of what we could call the vocal minority here in the United States. We here in the state of Florida, we have a vocal minority in the Miami area that's been arguing for punishing sanctions against the people of Cuba for the last 50 years or so. They haven't really worked. And now we have this pro-Israeli vocal minority that's arguing for sanctions against Iran. And they will not work. But what I would suggest is these sanctions are right out of the playbook of regime change practiced by Hillary Clinton and George Soros, who gets a lot of support, and he supports the Obama administration. And it's right here in this book called From Dictatorship to Democracy by Gene Sharp. Gene Sharp is the author of How to Conduct Regime Changes, and sanctions are part of his playbook. Setting up parallel governments is part of his playbook, and the recent delisting of the MEK, the Mujahideen of Khalq, by the State Department is a clear indication that it's not going to just stop with sanctions, that there's going to obviously be a recognition of an Iranian government in exile at some time in the near future, according to the Gene Sharp playbook.
We're going to look at some of those aspects momentarily, Wayne Mattson. But Christopher Walker, What makes it right when the U.S. and its allies are guilty of these sanctions that they have put in, which basically endangers lives? And I'm talking about the ones, for example, that have targeted airplanes. On record, 1,000 plane crash deaths in the past decade have been recorded, not to mention medicine. I mean, these are, in some cases, life-saving. I mean, isn't that illegal under the human rights conventions and laws?
Yes, I think it is, and I think the same thing happened in Iraq and Libya when they had sanctions imposed on them. But the trouble is that in the West, there is an absolute panic that the Israelis are going to attack Iran. And these sanctions are seen as a desperate measure to try and prevent such an attack. That's the only prism through which they are being regarded by governments. And frankly, the ordinary people are not aware of a lot of these repercussions that you've talked about on children, aeroplanes and such like. And there's been an added spur to this sanctions call with the news that the Israelis are going to hold an early general election early next year, which will, it's feared, give Mr. Netanyahu, their prime minister, the last push needed to get him to launch an attack on Iran if something hasn't happened before.
Dr. Arfiyah Zoghbi, this recent bill that was approved, H.R. 1905, I'd like to talk about that with you. And what's interesting about this bill is that it makes it actually illegal for U.S. diplomats to engage their Iranian counterparts. Maybe you could expand on that for us. It also strips the president's authority to license the repair of Iran's civilian aircraft, for example, to prevent needless civilian deaths, and imposes indiscriminate sanctions that would increase gas prices and hurt the Iranian people. Tell us, why would they actually target diplomacy? That's my reading, making it illegal for U.S. diplomats to engage their Iranian counterparts. Can you explain that for us?
I'm sorry, can you repeat the last part? There was some noise in the studio.
Sure. This sanction, this bill that was approved by the Senate, making it illegal for U.S. diplomats to engage with their Iranian counterparts. It makes it sound like they're trying to target diplomacy. Why would they do that?
Well, you know, I would call that diplomatic self-sabotage because there are some people in Washington among the policymakers as well as the lawmakers who are not interested in seeing mutually a respectable resolution of the nuclear standoff for various reasons, one of which has to do with Israel's vested interests that pertains to Israel's problems with its Arab neighbors and the Palestinians and so forth. So there is a systematic effort to torpedo any decent opportunity that has materialized, particularly in the past few months, for some breakthrough in the nuclear negotiations. And I've followed these talks very closely when, for example, in Istanbul, Iran, for the first time, made a conciliatory gesture. There was no reciprocity on the part of the other side, particularly the Western nations led by the United States. And, you know, this pattern of obstinacy and inflexibility is counterproductive to an amicable resolution of the nuclear standoff, can escalate the matter, and this will in turn hurt, among others, the European trade partners with Iran, because Europe is number one trade partner with Iran, and billions of dollars are invested there, as the Supreme Leader rightly said, and it would be foolish on their part to see this nuclear standoff escalate any further. And I think that this was a good wake-up call from the leader to the Europeans, because there are a lot of European companies that are pressing their governments to, you know, turn around and have a rational attitude toward Iran. And I hasten to add that even in the United States, the vice chairman of General Electric, John Rice, recently made a statement that this nuclear standoff with Iran is hurting GE's transatlantic relations with the Europeans. So even in the United States, there are some increasing voices of dissent toward the sanctions.
And that's a great point, Dr. Afiazabi. Wayne Madsen, what do you think? I mean, really, this most recent round that started a few months back, U.S.-led, I can't forget Timothy Geithner going to China, asking China to basically not buy Iranian oil, basically telling them, hurt your economy, but follow us with these sanctions. When the issue of sanctions becomes politicized for countries to follow, with U.S. being in the lead, and in turn hurt their economy, it doesn't make that much sense, does it?
It doesn't make any sense. And I just returned from China, and after seeing all the automobiles on the road in China and the burgeoning middle class, I don't think China's going to stop buying Iranian oil, and I don't think they're going to listen to Mr. Geithner, of all people, about applying sanctions against Iran. As a matter of fact, I think India and China and Russia have all pretty much stated that they're not interested in punitive sanctions against Iran. But the United States still thinks of itself as the world's only superpower. And I think that's a concept that President Obama is going to have to stop thinking along these terms. Mitt Romney, on the other hand, does think in these terms, but the United States cannot call these sanctions shots anymore. They were totally unsuccessful against Cuba, and we've seen European countries maintain good economic relations with that country, and I don't think that we're going to see anything in the way of much support except from the Europeans, who are much more wedded to the United States than Russia, China, and India. I don't think we're going to see those particular countries follow the U.S. lead on sanctions.
And Christopher Walker, when we talk about how sanctions have been ineffective, of course they have had an effect. But looking at some of the examples of it not working, for example, just a headline reading that many economists estimate Iran may still earn more from exports than it spends on imports, which gives them this leeway to resist these sanctions, not to mention the new data from IMF in which it has forecast an economic rebound and lower inflation for the year 2013, which pretty much nails on the coffin of sanctions, and the sanction regime doesn't work. So why does the U.S. and its allies continue down this route?
Yes, the IMF report makes particularly interesting reading, and very bad reading for those in America and in Europe who back these sanctions. Don't forget that next week there's going to be a summit of European leaders, and renewed pressure for stepping up the sanctions further. The evidence that sanctions doesn't work is there to be seen, as I've already explained. But you've got to remember that Western governments are dealing with publics who don't want to see troops on the ground, if they can possibly help it, in foreign and Islamic lands any longer. They want them out of Afghanistan. They've got them mostly out of Iraq. They certainly don't want to see them go into Syria. The public won't wear it. So sanctions is the one thing that you can do, the governments would argue, that shows you're doing something. And they are just using it to appease Israel. I can almost hear the telephone conversations. Look, Mr. Netanyahu, hold back your jets. We're stepping up the sanctions. And they're working. So you've got one side arguing the sanctions aren't working, the other argue that they are working, but you've got the IMF saying, frankly, down the line, 2013, the Iranian economy is not going to be severely damaged.
Dr. Afrasiabi, please explain this for us. Iran's leader has made a statement. Tell us what you think. He said that these sanctions are not about Iran's nuclear program. Ultimately, it's not even about that. It's beyond that. First of all, do you agree that even, for example, if this nuclear standoff was resolved, that the U.S. and its allies would find other reasons behind trying to demonize Iran? Because ultimately, it's about Iran standing up to the West and resisting its hegemony and its policies. And that's what this is all about.
Exactly. And if you look at the history of Western sanctions on Iran, they began basically right after the Islamic Revolution, and in the mid-1990s entered a new phase during the Clinton administration. And, you know, this was before all this hoopla about Iran's so-called nuclear threat, and there's a whole set of arguments that are presented under the guise of concern for human rights or terrorism and so on that will be used to sustain the sanctions even in the aftermath of a successful resolution of the nuclear standoff. Let me hasten to add that with respect to the ineffectiveness of the sanctions, we've seen reports in, for example, the Wall Street Journal indicating that despite all the, you know, Western efforts, many leading banks in Europe are continuing to have trade financial relations with Iran. Even in the U.S., there are exemptions for food and medicine, and there are some 20 countries, including 10 from the European Union, that are exempted from the oil embargo. So, you know, in today's globalized world, it is very difficult, if not impossible, to impose a wholesale sanction on a regime without due justifications and succeed. I would like to compare the sanctions to dog bites. You know, they have nuisance, and they bite, but one does not die of dog bites. And that is why the leader is perfectly correct that Iran will prevail, just as many other nations who have been subjected to sanctions, such as Cuba and India, over decades have survived them, and Iran is no different.
Well, I'm going to ask you the same question, Wayne Mattson. This is not about Iran's nuclear file. This is about Iran being a power. It's about Iran standing up to the West and resisting its hegemony and policies. What do you think?
Well, absolutely. I think what we see here is the Obama administration following a policy of trying to affect changes in regimes, whether it's done through subterfuge or more openly through military intervention, as we saw in Libya. We saw an attempt to try to give the opposition candidate in Venezuela lots of money, and it failed. And in Iran, it's the sanctions, but it's also supporting the MEK. And I think this is sort of a hybrid move by the U.S. government to seek a government change in Iran. And the nuclear issue is just a side issue. And unfortunately, with the way the Congress is beholden to the Israeli lobby, you mentioned Brad Sherman, they want to punish the Iranian people. And of course, that's the net result of this. They don't care if a plane crashes because of faulty parts or somebody dies in a hospital because they couldn't get the right kind of medication. This is the extreme nature of the lobby that governs the Congress in Washington. But the nuclear issue is being used as a catalyst to affect this regime change.
As if all the countries, and this is the last question, Christopher Walker, in Europe are taking care of business within their own countries. I mean, look, in Spain, in the UK, in Italy, in Greece, and all, I could go on. All these people of each respective country are suffering from bad monetary policies. So what reason does the U.S. and, not to mention the Occupy movement in the U.S., the U.S. And its allies have for trying to stoke tension within Iran? That is something that they can't even stand on within their own country based on their failed policies.
No, it couldn't have come at a worse time. for the European economies. They don't, have the leeway to start slapping down orders, preventing their banks doing what has been profitable work. So that's a very big obstacle to these sanctions working. And I think, really, once we get over the crucial period of the American election in early November, we may see some sort of change of policy there. But what they don't want, and they really don't want, is Mr. Netanyahu using that election period as an excuse for the Americans turning a blind eye if he sends in his bombers.
We're going to leave it there. Thank you very much, political commentator Christopher Walker there from London. I'd also like to thank author and political scientist Dr. Kaveh Afriyasabi and investigative journalist Wayne Mattson from Florida. And thank you for watching another edition of the Press TV News Analysis. If you have any questions or comments, please do send them. Newsroom@presstv.ir is our email address. From Mikhail Tahbay and the entire team in the capital, Tehran, it's goodbye.